So now we're actually looking at the business case of the additional parameters for controlled unclassified information, because we're very conscientious about where our data resides and how it's protected. And so we're looking at internally doing pilots based upon the categorization, based upon the data types, to see, you know, what's the security requirements for those data types, but also is it applicable, is it the right environment to take out to the commercial. So that's why we're doing pilots under the auspice of our risk executive function.
I want to go back to the pilots in a second, but the risk executive function is who and what? Like, how does that work? Because we hear a lot about risk.
They'll make the risk determinations from enterprise or the broader aspect of accepting risk on behalf of the department, where a local commander would make their own risk decision. Well, some things maybe have a bleed over into other areas where it would go to that risk executive function for that final, no kidding, everyone use it. If the ISRMC says it's good, it's good.
So then what happens next is you're saying, okay, for FedRAMP, for enterprise-wide services that are in the cloud, that would go through this risk management executive function. And then what they're doing is saying, okay, what requirements do we need to plus FedRAMP, and do those make sense for us?
Correct. The department has established what's called the Enterprise Cloud Broker. So the broker is the one actually helping with the security requirements and then that leveraging piece. So they're basically the facilitator of the pilots, and that's done through the Defense Information Systems Agency, DISA. And when they get the results of their pilots based upon are these good, are the, you know, which missions are good, which data sets are good, the requirements for the protections are good, that would go back to the risk executive function for approval.
And talk a little bit about the pilots at DISA. What they're looking at is mainly levels, which ones, and then they're looking for specific use cases that make sense from a mission perspective.
Correct. They're targeted right now just at level 3, so they don't want to jump to the 4 and 5 because of the additional pieces. They're just trying to get that baseline aspect of the security requirements based upon the level 3. Is it implementable? And then to monitor that implementation under a pilot to see are the security parameters right? Maybe some of these environments are not used to the types of threats that the department has, so now it's a growing piece. So we're really trying to really establish that the process, foundations, as well as the requirements. Do we have the right requirements based upon the mission, and is it applicable to go into those environments?
A service has to basically sponsor that mission need to do the pilot, or do you guys already have an idea or two in the works?
So if I remember correctly, through the pilot program that DISA was doing, they are bringing components that have an actual mission need.
Is there a time frame yet around that yet? Is it just getting started? Where are you at in that process?
If I remember correctly, it is started. We don't want to do a pilot and say this is a 30-day test and think that's globally acceptable. So I think they want to do a little bit more time of incremental implementation, incremental monitoring. So I really can't give an end state of when the pilots would, you know, when we declare success. But I just noted it is in the works.
And then going back to the broader idea of getting the levels right, because people in your experience within DOD maybe have either turned the security up too high or turned the security down too low based on they're not thinking about mission need. They're thinking more about, okay, what's the cost or what's the impact? Give me a sense of that. You call it, I think, how they calibrate the need for security against the mission.
So we're in a budget-constrained environment, so we can't just look at every system as equal. So some systems may have differing requirements based upon the impact of the information. So we're just trying to do a little bit more analysis on the business case of what's the right level of protections for certain types of information, and then trying to apply the correct level to that information. So actually, we're not putting every bucket, you know, having one big umbrella for 50 different things. We may be able to calibrate it to say this type of information needs these security requirements, these ones need these minus this, and just trying to get it correct so that way we're not overspending and putting these blanket checks on everything, but actually the appropriate cost for security based upon the value of the information.
Let me shift gears to Maria Rote from the General Services Administration, the FedRAMP program director. One of the things that you mentioned during the panel discussion was this look at different levels and specifically the high level. Now, you at GSA and through the Joint Authorization Board, the JAB, you guys are just starting to kind of have those continued conversations about whether you guys need or whether there needs to be kind of a high model for FedRAMP. What's the latest with that idea? Because I know it's something that we've talked about that you feel like you probably talk about a whole lot.
For the high baseline, we've had a lot of questions on that. When I first came on board the program a year and a half, people were asking, you know, are you going to have a high baseline? And I pushed back on the questions and I said, tell me what the requirements are. When you go back several years, probably about 3-4 years ago, GAO came out with a report that said 88% of the systems across the federal government are at the low and moderate baseline. So that leaves another 12% that are at the high baseline. And most of those are within DOD and DHS, plus there's some at VA and some of the other agencies. But when you start pushing and trying to get some numbers, it was really hard to get the numbers. So a year ago, I wasn't comfortable, you know, not understanding what the scope of that high systems are, really pursuing a high baseline. But, you know, fast forward a year later, and here we are, there's more interest in that high baseline. In particular, I've had discussions with NPPD, really looking at what are those systems around critical infrastructure that have high requirements, as opposed to other agencies that might have high availability only for that requirement. And with what NIST is doing around the cloud framework as well, looking at, you know, what's that high baseline for the cloud. So there's a lot of discussion going on around the cloud. I don't have a good number yet around what it should be. And when you look at the expectations around what that high baseline is, you know, NPPD's expectation about what a high baseline looks like for critical infrastructure could be very different from what DOD and even DHS considers as a high baseline. So pulling all the different parties together and really understanding who should really decide what that final baseline looks like and how should that be applied across the federal government. What's good for across the federal government? You could have disparate requirements between NPPD, what DOD, what DHS wants, and what, you know, even what NIST is thinking.
Really, agencies have not been clamoring for the move to high. I mean, the GAO statistics are fascinating. Agencies don't seem to need that high level yet.
Not yet. A lot of agencies really have a requirement for high availability, that high across the board for the baseline. They're really not clamoring for that, if you will. You know, you've got DOD and DHS, as I mentioned, but a lot of the other agencies, they're really not asking for that at this point. However, you know, even when you look at the agencies at the low and moderate levels for the authorizations that have been issued, agencies aren't even adding controls onto that right now. As the agencies are reviewing the provisional authorizations, they're not adding controls. They're understanding what the environment is, and they're not having a need to do that. The only exception right now is DISA with DOD. Certainly there's, you know, a number of parameters and controls that they add on. But outside of that, we're not seeing that level of, you know, oh, I have to add 50 controls or I have to add 5 controls. They're accepting the work that's done now and that they're accepting that risk posture of those cloud providers.
Moving more broadly outside just the idea of the security baselines, but FedRAMP, obviously, it's big deadline, June 5th. Things are moving forward as you hope for. One of the things that came out during the conversation today that I thought was fascinating was specifically focused on agencies with similar needs, that you guys are playing a role in bringing them together around cloud services and the idea of securing similar cloud services. Was that kind of maybe a different role for FedRAMP than maybe expected of a collaborator?
So we've done a lot of collaborating with, you know, with the cloud service providers, you know, responding to questions and from agencies. And what we found we've been doing is really facilitating conversations. We have one right now where the cloud provider came to us and they said, look, there are 3 agencies out there. They all want to do the accreditation. They all want to do it now. And they're not talking to each other. So we help pull those 3 agencies together. One of the agencies is really driving it. They've taken the lead. The other 2 agencies are supporting that authorization, providing ISSOs, participating in the reviews, the testing. So we're trying to help with that. And this isn't the only instance. There's many others where we're really trying to help facilitate that conversation.
One of the other interesting things you mentioned was the idea of looking to the future for FedRAMP, not just, you know, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, getting more vendors through the process. But what's FedRAMP going to look like in a year from now, 2 years from now? Talk about that strategic vision.
In really looking a couple years downstream, it's what's that landscape going to look like? Because you could have potentially maybe 45 or 50 cloud providers with a big footprint across the federal government, whether it's infrastructure or software as a service. And maybe 2 years out, that at some point there's going to be a leveling of the cloud providers. Some will go into the market space, some will move out of it. So there's that business aspect of it. So I see that coming, that there's going to be, you know, at some point the joint authorizations. But I also see the agencies stepping up, and there's going to be more authorizations from the agencies, certainly, than what's being handled at the the provisional ATO level. I think there's going to be changes around continuous monitoring. Right now we're doing, you know, every month, the scans, the reports. You know, at what point do we say, you know, maybe we don't need to do an annual authorization? So we're thinking through that, as well as taking feedback from the cloud providers and really getting industry's take on what should the program look like 2 years out and how that's going to change and how it's going to morph, if you will.